And now I'd like to talk about where the Venus goddess figure that I've been exploring for the past 20 or 30 years comes from. It's a kind of romance of mine by exploring this figure to associate my artwork with the first artwork done by Peoplekind. That is, the very earliest works we know by Peoplekind are these fertility figurines, which appear from northern Spain over southern France into Turkey and the Middle East. And they're thought to be fertility figurines to guarantee success in the hunt or raising crops, or before that, finding berries, I don't know. And these are the earliest known artworks by people. And so by one aspect of my work is to associate what I do with the very first work done by people, the Venus of Willendorf and the cave Venus of Lascaux. The Venus of Willendorf is from near Vienna, and it is thought to be 40,000 years old. Now they've just found a new one that's 50 or 60,000 years old, and I don't have pictures of it yet, but it's probably a traditional, typical fertility figurine with large breasts and wide hips and so on. And people often ask me why the top of the head is cut off of my women figures. Well, there's also the arms at the elbow and the feet at the knees. And I had a friend, Dennis Wheeler, who did many Time magazine and a few Newsweek and many Life magazine covers. And he's an very successful advertising designer, graphic designer. And he once said that if a thing is worth taking a picture of, you should go in a little closer. And as long as you're in close, maybe go in a little closer. And so these figures are kind of a close-up of a fertility figurine in a way that also brings into mind the winged Nike of Thrace and the Grecian figurines, most of which have cracked heads and broken arms. Even 1800s sculpture in many large parks have missing arms and part of the head missing or part of a leg missing. And so it's like to build an association to these kind of figures. Once John Cage, as a younger man in Paris, was interested in architecture as well as music, and Schoenberg told him that that was wrong, that you must pick one. You must take a wall and bang your head against it. And even if you don't make a crack in the wall, that's your wall. So one of my, a wonderful idea I have from John Cage is to accept the limitations and work within them. So then taking the limitations of this kind of symbol figure, and as a limitation enforced by economy, not having any money, I began to use Hershey bar wrappers, and then later different colors of cheap ordinary paper, like the brown paper that comes from Underberg bottles, or the silver paper that comes from cigarette packs or candy packages. And at one point in the late 70s in California, I didn't have money for Hershey bar wrappers to buy the Hershey bars, and I didn't have any money at all. And there was a huge ashtray where I worked on my daughter's side porch in Hollywood, about a block from Grauman's Chinese Theater, also near Hollywood High School. And I thought, why not do something with burnt matches and cigarette butts? So I began to make these figures, first flat and then dimensional figures from cigarette butts and burnt matchsticks. So I come from, I'm in my middle 60s now. I'm 65 and it's 1992. So I was born in 1927, and as a kid I grew up in the Depression. We were very economy-oriented. Also, my father was Norwegian descent. My mother was Scotch-Irish. And they had three or four kids, and they had enough money. But we didn't, like, throw money around. So a kind of respect for money and saving things and reusing things was kind of built into me at an early age, not to waste anything and to finish the food on your plate and so on. So it wasn't until, this was the late 70s, and ecology had been an important issue with the left and with art, creative, culturally oriented, creative thinking people since the late 60s. But, it wasn't until the late 80s that I saw myself as a recycler. It had been so natural to me that I didn't really think of myself as a recycler. And someone in an article or something referred to me as a recycler. And I was amazed that that never occurred to me. For a big picture, I had seen myself as a kind of alchemist, turning base things into noble things, or taking really objectionable, shitty, funky materials and making something really interesting or exciting, or something you could think into from that, sort of like turning shit into gold. And I'm also influenced by the bits and pieces cultures of so-called primitive people, where natives in the bush or in a desert area or in a jungle that doesn't have any nails will take cultural leavings from the so-called white man. And the so-called primitive people will use these to fashion objects that are useful and to make god, magic, or fetish figures. Like the classic example would be a thing from the Congo, a figure of a woman with 500 handmade and old ancient antique nails and knife blades stuck in it, and then this would be covered with chicken excrement. Excrement means chicken shit and blood in rituals. And so I also feel that my goddess figures have a capability built into them where one could also use them to think on the Earth Mother and the mother of all creation, the Earth, and so on, to think and feel in that direction. My work is also related to Southeast Asian temple goddesses, and these are very sinuous, snake-like armed, undulating figures that are very full. They seem to be pneumatic, to be pumped up with air inside. And in Southeast Asian Buddhist religion, they are thought to be in a state of taking an accushed breath, to be having the breath of life or of the Buddha in them. And they also often, like the Buddha figures, are not human. That is, all the fingers are the same length, all the toes on the feet are the same length. And they're not really operating, the body and the figure is not functioning the way a human figure functions. And, yes. The Eskimos are an interesting bits and pieces culture because they have to work with bits and pieces. That's all they have. There are no trees, there are no bushes, there's very little grass, only in the, maybe in midsummer. And in the Museum of Natural, in the Primitive Art Museum, the Rockefeller Primitive Art Museum on 54th Street in New York, I saw an Eskimo bow for shooting arrows that was made of 50 or 60 little pieces of wood, all cut to fit together and lashed together with hide and thread and sinew, and it operated as a bow.